Today is June 21st, the first day of summer, and here in the Phoenix area, it's supposed to be a record temperature of 115 degrees, but being a political season, presidential candidates is in town, and today it's Governor Bill Richardson out of New Mexico. Presidential Town Hall Series, Working Families Vote 2008, come to Phoenix. Governor Bill Richardson, Democrat out of New Mexico, picked Arizona to participate in the Working Families Vote 2008 Town Hall Series. AFL-CIO candidate forums give union families the opportunity to meet the candidates and ask them what they would do to make America work for working families.
Before the event happens inside, there's protesters out in the streets. How come you're out here protesting?
Because Bill Richardson vetoed Senate Bill 17 in the California legislature several months ago after it unanimously passed out of the Assembly and the Senate. Unanimous support from legislators. The public wanted it. He waited until sessions stopped, until there was no recourse, and then he vetoed a bill with absolutely no discussion. A bill that would have helped, provided a lot of psychological, genealogical, and emotional support to grieving mothers.
But the governor here is from New Mexico.
Right, but he's running for president. This is, our president, the person who represents the United States of America, has no place in pandering to special interest groups. I know that it currently happens, but that's what our government, that's what our people are trying to change in our government.
So this is a general protest then?
This is a general protest, yeah. This is autocratic misuse of power, pandering to special interest groups. That's fascism. It has no place in a democracy.
You sound like an anarchist.
I might.
Well, this isn't the usual anarchist group that's out on the streets of Phoenix.
Well, we're all mothers who have experienced the death of a baby during birth. This is an interest that's close to our hearts. But, you know, if he would have vetoed it after having some open and honest intellectual dialogue with us about it, well, then he's at least vetoing it on goodwill. But there was no goodwill. He did it behind closed doors. There were excuses that made no sense at all, that he couldn't therefore back up when the media confronted him in his own state. That's pandering.
So what do you think of the governor here in Arizona?
What do I think of the governor here in Arizona?
On your issue.
What do I think of Janet Napolitano?
On this issue that you're protesting.
Janet Napolitano, the law is passed here. This issue is passed here. So it's not an issue here. Governor Hull signed it into law, but Governor Napolitano did actually sign a subsequent law, similar law. So I'm go Napolitano, you know. I got no problem with her. My problem is with the autocratic misuse of power. That's where my problem is.
How come you were now a couple Saturdays ago when Kucinich was in town?
Well, this is my specific issue. This is my personal specific issue. That he vetoed Senate Bill 17 in the California legislature several months ago, without any open dialogue or intellectual discussion whatsoever with the authors of the bill. This is a bill to help grieving mothers, and rather than openly and honestly discussing it with us, I mean, if he wants to veto it, okay, but have an open, honest discussion with the people, have a special interest in this, rather than pandering to the large socio-political organizations that could potentially influence his presidential campaign. That's fascism, right?
What do you hope to be out here today? What do you hope to accomplish?
Well, we've subsequently sent letters to his office in New Mexico asking them to engage in some dialogue with us so we could provide some education and some awareness so that we could tell him the history and the cultural aspects of this issue, but they've completely stonewalled us and won't even talk to us about it. So the reason that we're here is to send a message that we're not going away, that tens of thousands of women across the country have been affected by his decision, and he's lost a lot of presidential votes as a result of this decision, not just the decision itself, but the way in which he executed that decision, and the message is that we're not standing behind you as president.
What's your name now?
I'd rather not say.
Okay, thank you. Are you from Arizona?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
You could probably talk to Shannon Lawrence. You give her name.
Are you
That was one of the local TV news broadcasters asking questions also.
Good morning, Arizona. I'd like to welcome Arizona's workers, Arizona's labor leaders, Arizona's union members, Arizona's elected officials. They're all over here, so wave to them.
Hello.
Hi. Welcome. I'm going to give you a little bit of a rundown on what we're doing here today. This is part of the National AFL-CIO's Working Families 2008. There have been six of these. We're very fortunate that Governor Richardson selected Arizona, and we are very appreciative of that. We are going to, yes. What this is a six-month intensive program to engage union members and their families in the presidential endorsement process, and we are very excited and happy about this process. We are sixth in a series of six. I think there is one more with Dennis Kucinich in Ohio. They've been in, well, there you go. There, you give it up for Dennis. That's okay. they've done Miami, Seattle, Detroit, Sacramento, Trenton, New Jersey, and we're very fortunate because, as you know, we are now, for all of the AFL-CIO members in here, we are officially a battleground state. Whoa, as we should have been. I would personally like to thank the legislature for signing DIE last night so that we are all relieved. So, let's talk about Governor Richardson. I've known Governor Richardson since he was Secretary of Energy. I worked with him in New Mexico. He was the governor of New Mexico. One of the first things he passed was public employee collective bargaining. He just recently increased the minimum wage to $7.50 over 2 years. He has an energy plan, if elected, he has an energy plan that will reduce 90% of greenhouse gases. And isn't it that exciting that we'll have air for all of our children to breathe? Let me throw these down. I'm out of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. And if you don't know who I am, my name is Rebecca Friend, and I'm Secretary Treasurer, Executive Director of the Arizona AFL-CIO. So I forgot that. Thank you. I just always assume, since there's so many hit pieces on me in the paper, that you just have my photo in your houses somewhere. But Governor Richardson is a great friend of labor. He's had a 90% COPE voting record. For all of you union members, you know that's how we rate the legislators on how they vote. 90% COPE voting record. You're going to hear from workers today, and we've had questions submitted from workers. So I want you right now to give the best Arizona welcome you can to Governor Richardson. Here he comes. One more time, Governor Richardson.
I want you to say hello to Pamela Blanford, who's 99 years old. She said she's for me, too, so I love you, Pamela. I'm very happy to be here. And what I want to do is just first thank the AFL-CIO, so many union members here. Yes, I selected Phoenix. This is the best city in America. Except for some in Iowa and New Hampshire. No, I'm just kidding. I want to thank members of my executive committee that are here. They're also state reps. I know Rebecca acknowledged them. But I'm very pleased that members of the legislature, Representative Steve Gallardo, Senator Sandra Kennedy, Chad Campbell, Ed Pastor, and where is Sandra? I saw her here. There she is. Senator, thank you so much. Let's have a big hand also for... Let's have a big hand for Rebecca and all the AFL-CIO, because you know the legislature just ended last night. Thank God, right? But they did two very good things. One was workers' comp, and two, minimum wage increase with indexing. So let's give them a big hand. And Representative Gallardo, I understand, was the chairman of the committee that had it happen. And I want to thank him. I have been given the task of speaking for 10 minutes. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
10 minutes. Impossible for a politician. But I will do that and then take questions. This next election for president... This is what I believe it's about. It's about how America can confront the following challenges. But the biggest one is this. How can globalization in America and in the world help the masses? What do I mean by that? I mean that how can we have globalization work for America's middle class? This election is about helping the middle class, because you see today in our country a middle class that feels squeezed by pension insecurity, by wages that have not gone up consistent with inflation, by health care costs, both costs and coverage, and the need for a universal health care plan, but also, I believe, for a changing workforce in this country that needs an economy that is going to include the middle class. What do I mean by the middle class? I mean ordinary men and women who work every day, play by the rules, but somehow in this very rapidly growing globalized world, you see statistics about how the economy nationally, stock market, quote, doing well, growth statistics looks good. Maybe unemployment statistics in some part of the country look good. In other words, there's lower unemployment than before. But somehow the squeeze on the middle class continues. And I know there are a lot of international issues which we can discuss. How do we get out of Iraq in a sensible way? How do we become energy independent? And there it's going to take an Apollo program to reduce our dependence on foreign oil, and I believe we can create thousands of new jobs and retrofitting homes and renewable energy. How can we restore America's prestige internationally and be known as a country of laws and not a country of Guantanamos and Abu Ghraibs and forgetting habeas corpus and standing up for the international labor laws? How can we also rebuild our educational system, make our schools better, make them competitive in science and math? How can we assure our senior citizens and our young people that Social Security and Medicare are going to be there for them in the future? How can we also ensure that, as I said, this economy is an economy that is going to take into account the enormous strains that today America's middle class faces? I want to talk about unions because I know there are a lot of union people here. I want you to look at me. I am a governor. I've been a congressman, a secretary of energy, a UN ambassador who has always fought for working people and unions, because unions have been very good to me. You know, when you first run for office and you lose, which happened to me, It's, and I discovered after winning and losing, it's better to win. And I say that because when I didn't win, it was unions. It was working people. It was the building trades. It was AFSCME. It was teachers unions that backed me up. I don't forget that. I don't forget it easily. And I don't forget that when I came back after being in the cabinet and running for governor, that the unions were there for me. My difference, I believe, and there are going to be these forums from around the country, is that I'm not only for working people and for unions, but I've done it as a governor. I don't just say, this is how I'm going to vote. I not only have voted, but I have passed legislation that affects our working people. This is what I've done in New Mexico, and this is what I would do as president. Number one. Number one, I passed 2 weeks into my office. Governor had taken collective bargaining off. I restored it after 2 weeks. We got it passed. I would do that as president. Secondly, I would, as Rebecca mentioned, we increase the minimum wage. But I believe we need to do not just this nationally, but with a cost of living index. And I am also here ready to talk about perhaps somehow with the cooperation of all engaged, the business community, about a living wage for every American. Number three, in New Mexico, we have a very clear view of what a good wage is. In New Mexico, the union wage is the prevailing wage. Now that is something that I will try to push as president. We have project labor agreements with our university in New Mexico. It has to be union built. And I would look at legislation nationally that says, if the federal government is going to use prevailing wage, I want that to be enforced in any federal facility, any federal entity. This president is going to stand and say that it should be a union workforce. I will do that. AFSCME. I know there's some of you here. How many AFSCME people are here? Well, you guys are pretty loud usually. But I want to just say to AFSCME and all public employee unions, I value the state worker and the federal worker. You know, you're always the first one that gets shot at in terms of, waste. But if you look at my state, the most generous health and union package in the country in the last 4 years was done in New Mexico. And I want to just say to all of you here, I hope you don't sound, or I don't sound like here's a guy that's making a lot of promises. I'm just saying what I've done and what I want to do. But what I will do, which may be different than other candidates, is that I not only have done it, but I know how to get it done. In the Congress, I was a whip in the House, somebody that got votes. At the United Nations, you have to get a lot of American initiatives passed with 185 countries, so I like the engagement of convincing people. As Secretary of Energy, I was very proud to convince not just the White House, but the Congress to pass legislation that was long overdue. You know, the Department of Energy manages our nuclear weapons sites. And for many years, the nuclear weapons sites, the Cold War sites, were manned by men and women, perhaps your grandparents, that somehow, because of the security of the work, because of the terrible job that they were doing, producing nuclear weapons, that there was contamination. And many families and many human beings got these ailments and didn't have insurance, and the government wasn't there to help them. Well, we changed that, and we created an entitlement of about $150,000 for every Cold War worker, and close to 200,000 have used that. So what I'm saying to you is that we got a lot of issues affecting this country, and I believe that having membership in a union is good for the American worker. Now, why is that? Because of pension protection, because of health protection, because of protections in terms of the workplace and how you can be promoted, because also of wages. Wages not keeping up to par with inflation. Right now in America, only 8% of the workforce is unionized, if you look at public employees. If you add all the other non-private or private, it's 12%. And I believe if we're going to make bridges to build up a middle class, being in a union is important to the American worker. So I will be there for you when it comes to the Employee Free Choice Act. I will be there for you when it comes to card check that allows you to have elections in the workplace. I will be there for you when we look at issues affecting child care and other issues that I think we have to look at in terms of the workplace. Let me close with this point, because I know I'm going to get a lot of good questions. As I drove down here from the airport, I discovered one thing. You have a traffic problem. Now, you know, I'm not running for mayor of Phoenix. I'm not running for governor. I'm running for president. And the president should be somebody that leads and says to American cities that are growing, hey, you know, I've got a billion dollar highway bill that I put out every year. And usually those highway bills go to pork. You know, this senator, this congressman, I need this bridge to nowhere in Alaska or something. I believe that what we need to do, besides the fact that I believe we should eliminate those earmarks, is that we need to have a president that says to the Phoenixes, to the union workers, to the state, hey, we want to partner with you to either build light rail or build bullet trains to have more efficient ways that our people get to work. And that affects you as workers. So, that's something that is not just the case here in Phoenix. It's in Las Vegas. It's in Los Angeles. It's in Miami. You know, in New York, it's too late. You can't move. You're just standing. And so what I'd like to just say to you is that it's not just issues that relate to where you stand, where your union stands. It's issues that relate how we're going to live in America, as Americans. How we're going to be able to spend more time with kids, those of you that are working parents. You know, if you look at statistics, a third fewer dinners at home with kids exist today than in the last 10 years. A third. That's because mom and dads are working or work schedules are different. We got to look at flex schedules. We got to look at using computers more. We got to use more efficient transportation. We got to look at new ways in the workplace that our people can not just prosper and get the higher wages they deserve and the upward mobility, but also the quality of life. To spend time at home, to recreate, to go work in the gym. You know, 33% of our Medicare costs are because of diabetes. And a lot of that is an unhealthy workplace or people are not healthy. And we should be pushing and promoting that and finding ways for that to happen. Anyway, thank you so much, and I'm ready to take the first question.
Thank you, Governor. What we have today are three workers who are going to tell their stories to Governor Richardson and have some specific questions. Our first worker is Richelene Smith. She is a mom of three children, and she is a Red Cross, and here's the word I may need your help with, a phlebotomist. So, Richelene, would you like to speak to the Governor, please?
Hello, Governor Richardson. I'm a full-time employee of the American Red Cross. I'm a full-time phlebotomist for the American Red Cross, and right now we're trying to organize for the union, and We've been trying to organize for 3 years now. And in the beginning of the campaign, we had 80% of the employees at the Red Cross were card signers, and they asked to be recognized by the Red Cross, and they were turned down. And so they did a vote. They had a vote, and management became, they started their anti-union campaign so that we couldn't organize. We had a vote. We lost by 12. Then we had, then they violated our rights. It went to court. We got a revote. And at that time, we had 48% of the employees there were brand new. They weren't there during the last vote. And we lost by 6. And that vote was in April. Just since February, we've had 54 violations against the employees there. And they're not... I'm a little nervous. the violations are things just telling us that the union can't do anything for us. They can't help us with anything. They can't, you know, specifically, we've had like 14-hour work days, you know, backed with the 16-hour work days. We don't have lunch breaks. We don't have regular breaks. No breaks at all. We work 14 hours straight through before we even get to eat or get off the floor to get something to drink. And I've worked those hours myself. I've experienced those things myself, and management does do things like that. I've been written up myself personally for being told that it's against the law for me to talk about the union on company time, on work time, and I've been threatened to be fired. They write me up on a regular basis for those things. Right before our vote, they called my coworkers at home, upper management has, and told them that that I was a spy placed at the Red Cross by the union, and that as soon as the vote was over, I was going to be gone. I was just a bartender. I wasn't even an actual Red Cross employee. So those are the kinds of things that they've done to violate our rights. As far as the anti-union campaign and not letting us organize, they tie our hands, and they, right out of training during the campaigns, the new employees are told right off the bat that the union can't do anything for them. They're completely powerless in this right-to-work state, and it's very hard to try to gain ground with them, to try to get a fair yes vote for the union. They tell the employees that if they vote the union out, they'll take care of everything, and those are violations of our rights. And I guess my question to you is, as president, what will you do to protect us from those kinds of things happening, from our rights being violated like that?
Okay, the first thing you're going to tell all of us is, what is a phlebotomist? Don't you want to know? I don't know what it is.
Well, I draw people's blood.
Oh, okay.
I draw the blood for the blood donors for the Red Cross. Okay. That entity.
Well, I know that's a very, very important and skilled profession. How many knew that? I did go to school. Well, I want to start by obviously the fact that Arizona is a right-to-work state does not help. There are 22 of them in the country, and I would try to wipe those out as president. And it can be done. You know, we have a majority, I believe, of Democrats and Republicans. There's some that are supportive of worker rights in the House and Senate. It'd be a tough fight, but that's how I would start. Secondly, I would urge you, as an individual here, there's got to be some agencies here at the state level that might... listen to some of your claims, either a state OSHA department or a Department of Labor that might at least redress some of the inequities that you face. It strikes me that if they're making you work 12 hours, and there are a number of very strong cases you could make, and I ask that because I don't have the facts. But another federal initiative that I would take is I would strengthen OSHA. Now, that's the Safety and Health Administration that in this administration has been emaciated. I mean, they have been cut, I believe it's close to 50%. In fact, at the National Department of Labor, the only increases in their budget have been in enforcement. And those are enforcements against you guys. So this is not a very pro-labor administration. Now, what I would also do, which is part of an answer, that I want to name a cabinet that looks like America, that comes from ordinary Americans. I would name a union person a Secretary of Labor. I would do that. What else would I do? I believe having CartCheck, and you all know what CartCheck is, making that not just the law of the land, but enforcing it. Because there are some entities that don't allow it. They put every single barrier, and when you're facing an administration or a company or even a university, when it comes to CartCheck, they can put a lot of barriers in front of you, like limit the time of the voting. There are a lot of tricks that can be played. So we need a CartCheck law that allows you mechanically to unionize. Other steps that I would take would be to find ways that you in your field, this really is the Red Cross. I mean, I always think of the Red Cross as the greatest. You know, they're always helping people. That's what they do, huh? The Red Cross, the American Red Cross, or, huh? No?
Not employees.
Not here. I would. Chad, No. Well, no, I'm thinking of other steps. I've talked of the federal steps. I think are fairly clear. At the state level, where's my Steve? Steve, what could she do in terms of going to a state agency to at least file a grievance about her work? I know she can go to you as a legislator, but what entities exist to give her some kind of a grievance procedure?
The Industrial Commission?
The State's Industrial Commission
was probably my first step. But I think our first step is to repeal the state's right work law.
Yeah. Steve, at the federal level, what I would also do, the National Labor Relations Board basically issued a dictum that made it almost impossible to unionize in this country. I would replace the National Labor Relations Board, all of them. But that Industrial Commission, she could take that directly. Will you help her do that? Okay. Thank you. Let's give her a big hand.
Great job, Richelieu. Am I on? Great job, Richelieu. As you know, these are workers. These are not people that, they're not actors, they're not staged. So, you know, they deserve a warm welcome and support for standing up here, talking about the issues that we all go through every day. Our next worker, Governor, is Adriana Pena. She's a painter for Metro Valley for 2 years, and she has a 2-year-old, which should be a separate job all in itself, right, Adriana? And Adriana will also have a translator. Adriana, Governor.
Mucho gusto de conocerlo. Soy Adriana Pena. Soy trabajadora de construcción, pintora. Trabajo para Metro Valley por 2 años, pintando las casas para Pulte del Web. Soy madre de un niño, por ahí anda, no sé dónde está. Es muy difícil trabajar para una, más yo que soy mujer, es muy difícil.
Hi, Governor. Nice to meet you. My name is Adriana Pena. I'm a construction worker. I'm a painter for Metro Valley. I paint homes for, in Pulte del Web tracks. I am the mother of a little boy who's running around here, and it's really hard for me as a mother and as a woman to work as a painter.
Porque es para trabajar largas horas del día, trabajar yo como madre, levantar a mi hijo temprano y llevarlo con la babysitter. Entonces y para trabajar hartas, largas horas de trabajo por un salario que no es poco, y luego la aseguranza, que es lo principal, la aseguranza médica es muy cara, no la puede uno pagar, porque si pagas la aseguranza, pues tu cheque te queda muy más bajo de lo que lo sacas, y no es justo. Yo pienso que pues tenemos que salir adelante y ganar, trabajar, echarle ganas y pues ver a la compañía que haga algo para por nosotros. Claro, a ellos no les importan los empleados, a ellos lo único que les importa es vender casas y pintar y ganar su dinero ellos, pero los trabajadores no les importamos.
It's really hard waking up early, getting my child to wake up early, bringing him to the babysitter. The health insurance is very expensive. If I do pay for it, my salary it's nothing pretty much for the week. So I don't have health insurance because it's just too expensive. And my employer, he doesn't care about the workers. He just cares about the bottom line and just painting as many homes as possible. He doesn't care anything about the workers at all.
A las compañías ni siquiera les importa que uno trabaje en situaciones críticas como en este estado que es muy caliente. En esta época de calor está insoportable, las casas pintando por dentro. A las compañías no les interesa. Ellas lo único, a Pulte del Web y a Metro Valley, a ellas lo único que quieren es sus ganancias. A ellas no les importa el beneficio de los empleados ni el vivir de los empleados.
And working in Arizona with the heat gets really hot in the houses painting, and my employer doesn't care about the well-being of myself or any of the workers working in the homes and in this heat in Arizona. They don't care how hot it is. They just care about making as much money as they can.
Pues yo pienso que como ellos que ganan mucho dinero porque por año venden muchas casas y todo, pues todo gracias a uno, pues que trabaja el trabajador. ¿Quién lo hace? El trabajador.
While the employer is making all this money, it's the worker who's actually doing all the hard work, but they're not receiving any benefits or any rewards from it, really.
Mi última pregunta para usted es, usted, si usted llega a ganar la presidencia de este país, ¿qué piensa hacer con nosotros los emigrantes?
As president, what would you do for the immigrant worker? Is your question.
Je suis enchanté de vous être ici. Am I a show-off or what? Le voy a responder en español primero. Y luego, then what I'll do is I'll say something in English and you won't have to translate. Lo más importante para usted sería un plan de salud médico para todos sus hijos y para usted. Segundo, una habilidad de cómo nuestro país puede ayudarle a cuidar a sus hijos. Y eso sería ayuda para ponerlos en daycare. ¿Cuánto es lo que cuesta el daycare aquí? 750. No lo utiliza.
No.
Bueno, tercero sería un salario mínimo.
Ajá.
Que se lo pagan a usted ahorita. Que sea justo. Y último, una habilidad para que usted pueda subir y progresar y tener protección de la gente que le da empleo. What I basically said is, I think this young woman, and I'll answer the other immigration issue, which is the last one, which I think is the one she really wants answered, is that you take a young woman like her, a working mom, probably working in a job where there's no workplace protection. She's painting. And no regard for her health, you know, get the product done, do the painting so that the home is sold, probably below the minimum wage. I didn't ask, but I suspect without health benefits, it's obviously not enough for her and her one child. ¿Tiene una hija?
Un niño.
Un niño, one boy, who's 4 years old. You know, and there's a lot of people in this country like her, a lot. And they're not just immigrants. There are a lot of working moms that have two jobs. She has one job. What would I do? What I said, the first initiative that she needs, or the first benefit of hopefully, if I'm elected, that I would do is a national health care plan that would cover her as a worker. That would be universal. Obviously, and if I get a question on the specifics, I'll outline how I would do that, how I would pay for that. Because be careful of these politicians and say, I'm for universal care, it's a right, but then they don't tell you how they're going to do it or how they're going to pay for it. Because we have to change it right now. So that would be number one. Number two, an expansion of child care tax credits. This young lady has, obviously, she's at the poverty level. And in New Mexico, we pass legislation that gets us very close to 165% of the poverty level. But if you get at 200, which should be the goal of every state, and this is because of federal child care funds have not been sufficient. The states are moving it up. So an expansion of that child care tax credit would be very important for her. The third thing, and you're looking at a Democrat that likes to cut taxes. I've been able to do that in New Mexico. Our economy is strong. We cut the state personal income tax so that you wouldn't take all the good workers away, you know, our surrounding states, Colorado, you guys. So we lowered it, but we paid for it. It was 8.2. We went down to 4.9. And what we also did at the state level, which I would do at the federal level, is expand the earned income tax credit. Now, that's for working families. The earned income tax credit was passed in the Clinton years, and basically it covered those working families that were working, one kid, two kids, no kids, but they were working. It covered basically those between $16,000 and $40,000. It benefited those. I would expand that. That is still on the books, and I would expand that to go a little higher because the definition of a middle class, I believe, has expanded. I would also try to find ways that somebody like you can get training for another job. You know, we've spent, I was calculating the other day, $425 billion in the war in Iraq. All right, 425, give or take a few bill. And it seems to me that we ought to find a way in this country to be able, because I think education is the key. I would want you to go to school to learn a trade or find a way that you can move yourself up with more knowledge of this country. I'd want you to learn English too. I would try to find a way that you learn English because you got to be able to compete. And so my point there is
I would like to see universal education for every American. I'd like to see a national scholarship program that allows every American not just to go to college, but to go to community college. I understand you have a very good system here. A junior college, vocational training. Why did we ever get rid of vocational training in high schools? I mean, who thought of that? We try to bring it back, but find a way to give a young woman like her not just an incentive, but a little help, you know, a little scholarship that you'd qualify for you to get that training. So I can keep thinking more and more of the things that obviously a minimum wage would help. A living wage probably makes more sense, that is indexed so that you can be protected. Are you, Mendendez, are you going to tell her all this great stuff I'm saying? ¿Sí entiendes, no? Okay. And now, okay, so on the immigration question, what would I do? This is what I would do. There are five steps I would take on the immigration issue. And I've worked very closely with your governor, who's been a national leader on immigration. She's done a great job. And what I would do, and you know, I want you to know, I angered a lot of groups when 2 years ago in New Mexico, I had the first border emergency, and then Janet followed me 2 days later. A border emergency that said, you know, the federal government is not doing anything to contain the flow of drugs or people, and my constituents in Deming, New Mexico, were saying we're getting vandalized and people are getting shot, and so we declared border emergencies in essence to get state funds triggered so we could hire law enforcement, because the federal government, the Border Patrol, just wasn't there. So I know those of us here in Arizona and New Mexico know this issue firsthand. So this is what I would do. One, I would have more border enforcement. Si me entiendes? More border patrol, more technology. We have to do that. I would double the number. National Guard, I would do the same. Secondly, those that knowingly hire illegal workers should be punished. I mean, we don't do that. I would do that. Number three, I would have a conversation with our friends in Mexico. I was in international relations, and I'd say to Mexico, they're our friends. I'd say, Rebecca, you want to be Mexico? I'd say, hey, you know, hey, Mexico, why don't you help your people and do something to give them jobs? And maybe we will do something with you to help create jobs at the border and maybe joint projects. But at the very least, don't give people maps in the easiest areas to cross. You know, like, and you know, the president's Mexican American, they stand with the flags. You know, they get up there. And today we discuss immigration. Yeah, for about 2 seconds. Nothing. I think we got to be frank with our friends so that we deal with that problem too. Now, here are the most controversial part. Well, not this one. The fourth thing I would do is I would raise the legal immigration numbers. Legal. That we can use for highly skilled workers, H-1B visas, many others that are trapped in a backlog of bureaucracy. But here's the tough one, which is why the Congress is and the President are trying to resolve it, but have not. And I'm going to give credit. You know, I'm a candidate that says the relationship between the Congress and the President is dysfunctional, it's awful, they get nothing done. But I'm going to give them a little credit for at least attempting on the immigration bill, and they must come back and resolve this, because this is a very, very difficult, divisive issue. So I'm giving them a little credit in the hopes that they do something. But this is the key. The issue is going to be, what do we do with the 12 million undocumented workers that are in this country? You really have three choices. One is to leave things the way they are. Well, that's unacceptable. People living in the shadows, nobody knows what to do. That's option one. Option two is round them all up and throw them out.
You know, who's going to do that? The Border Patrol, local police? You can't do that. Who's going to find them? No, so it's just not practical. What happens to small business? What happens to agriculture? Half the hotels are shut down. So you've got to be practical. So the third thing you do is come up with a plan that is not amnesty. I don't believe there should be amnesty or citizenship. But in between what is called an earned legalization program, whereby the 12 million have to pass the following standards. One, they got to learn English. Tienes que aprender inglés. Number two, you got to obey the laws. Tienes que obedecer las leyes. And that means passing a background check. Third, embrace American values. You know, be judged by your peers to be part of a community. Ser parte de la comunidad. Four, pay a fine for having come here illegally. Una multa por haber entrado ilegalmente. Six, pay back taxes. And then certify that you're doing a job lawfully and legally. And then lastly, get at the back of the line of those that are trying to get here legally. Now, what does that mean in terms of citizenship and getting a green card? It means that after 9 years, you can probably get a green card. So this is why this isn't an amnesty. And after 12 years, you can apply for citizenship. You know, if you fulfill all that, is it going to create more bureaucracy? Yeah, it is. Is it going to, you know, be messy? Yeah. But there's another part, which I didn't get into, the guest worker program, that's very important to labor unions, where I agree with them. That these guest workers that come in, 400,000 for 2 years, then they go back for 2 years, then come back, they've got to have labor protections. They don't right now under the bill. They have to have health care and OSHA and the right to work. They don't have it now. And the Congress needs to fix it. I know that's a long answer, but it's really an important issue. ¿Entendiste? Okay.
Thank you, Adriana. I was going to wow you with my extensive use of Pig Latin, which is the only other language I speak. For those of you over 20, you'll understand what that is. The rest of you, we don't care. We don't want to know you're only under 20. All right. Our last worker, certainly not our least worker, is Bill Leonard. Bill Leonard, Governor, is a mental health programming specialist 3 for the Arizona State Hospital, which I'm sure he will explain to you how dangerous and gratifying on one hand and dangerous on the other that job is. Bill, Governor.
First of all, Governor Richardson, I'd like to thank you for just being here and making us all feel so comfortable being with you. My name is William Leonard, and I work for the state of Arizona at the Arizona State Hospital. I work as a psych tech, and I have been employed with the state for the last 19 years. I'm lucky to work with dedicated co-workers that in many cases have served the state mentally ill for much more time than I have. I am a union member, but I don't have the same rights as many of the people in this audience because we don't have collective bargaining rights as public employees in Arizona. The reason I joined the Communication Workers of America was that I realized that my individual voice probably would not be heard, but if my coworkers and I came together as a unified voice, we could make some real changes that would affect myself, my coworkers, and ultimately improve patient care. Some of the issues that affect me and my co-workers at the state hospital are high turnover, low morale, staff shortages, and low pay. These problems not only affect me, but the lives of the patients that we serve. It saddens me, sir, to see people who really need help not getting the best possible care. The reason we came together in the first place was to make sure we could have a livable wage, higher morale, and to find some solutions to these problems. Unfortunately, the state has not granted us the right to bargain collectively at this point. As president, what would you do to ensure that all public employees have the right to bargain collectively to improve our lives and the lives of the people that we serve?